Live from Houston, Texas, this is Big Ideas Small Business with your hosts, Laura Camrath and Brian Gendron. And now, the music of Max Flynn.
I'm starting to feel a little crazy again. I think it's time I start to pack my things.
All right, here we are again with Big Ideas Small Business, where we work with thought leaders and try to take a big idea they had and inspire our audience to take action on their own big ideas. Laura Camrath, how are you?
I'm good, Brian. How are you? I hear you got some really big news.
My son Joseph was born Sunday night. Very blessed.
Yeah, congratulations.
I saw pictures on Facebook. He's adorable.
It's incredible. He was just laying on me about an hour ago before I came here. So it's great. I'll be there after this, as much of this as I can get.
I was going to say, he's adorable. Are you sure he's your son?
No. paternity test is pending. Well, let me take a minute to introduce our guest. We're here today with Randall Chestnut. Randall, how are you?
Hey, doing fine. I can't complain for, what is it, Tuesday?
It is Tuesday.
If I did, nobody'd care anyway.
I ain't gonna listen. Let me talk about Randall. So Randall helps businesses through digital technology and digital marketing break through the noise, get to their target audience. He's got a number of ventures and things that he does. He's a marketing strategist, randallchestnut.com. If you're watching the video, it's down there at the bottom. He's the host of a podcast, Think Like a Marketer, and founder of the All In Academy and a number of other things. You do quite a bit of stuff, sir.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you know, that's what happens when you get old. Just do a lot of stuff, right?
For like things that you do. Yeah. But Laura, before we get into his big idea, any interesting facts about Randall?
Yeah, so Randall told me some crazy stuff about meeting a bunch of celebrities.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So in my former life, I was a flight attendant, which, you know, when you think about most people, when you tell them you're a flight attendant, everyone has their own story about a flight attendant if they've ever flown, and it's usually not good. But I had I was fortunate that I rarely have ever had that experience with people, except for one specific person who was very popular in the 80s. And she sat in first class.
Religion?
Yeah. if you know who that person is, wrote that song. That was one. Outside of that, I mean, I had a great, enjoyable time. But one of the things that took me to Las Vegas, because I was based in Las Vegas. Mm. And, being young and in Las Vegas, you could imagine the stories that I have. But one of them was I gambled a lot, played poker, and blackjack.
And, so what happens in Vegas doesn't stay in Vegas?
Well, all your money definitely stays in Vegas. and some other things. The Rolling Stones were having a concert at the Hard Rock.
Oh, wow.
And there was only 300 seats available. And most of the time, the Rolling Stones, how old are they? Like 900 years old or something? I mean, like, mm-hmm. Who knows? And they were performing at the Hard Rock Cafe. And I had gambled, and then Pitbull said, "Hey, you want tickets?" I'm like, "Heck yeah." And he goes, "Well, good. You got to get here early because they shut down the casino. It was full of mostly famous people. Out of the 300, at least 200 of them were famous people." And after the concert was over, they shut down the casino and only let the people who were in the concert gamble on the floor. It would have been a little awkward for, like, how do you, like, oh my God, I got to get their autograph or something. Uh-huh. So that was people. So the coolest part about it is that I got to, gamble. It was me, Jenny McCarthy, Stevie Van Zandt. I don't know if you know the guitarist, and he played Puss in The Sopranos, and Billy Baldwin, and we played blackjack on the same table. And it was the one time where you all could have something in common, and you could talk to somebody that, like, "Oh my God, I love your movie." Like, not that.
Yeah.
It was like, what should I do on this? Like, hit or not? Like, you're the expert, Randall. I became the table expert for these people.
So they came to you.
Yeah, so it was kind of cool. They didn't give me their phone numbers. Like, Jenny was like, "Okay, so I missed out, but Donnie Wahlberg didn't." So that's it. That's my fun fact.
Who was the coolest one that you met?
Out of everyone that I ever met in flying, hands down, I would probably say, and this is going to be weird, Newt Gingrich.
Really?
Yes. Nice. That guy was super interesting. I know, right? Mm-hmm. And he seems super, he is super concerned, but the guy is a brilliant conversationalist. Mm-hmm. And, it would be, between him and James Carville. I don't know if you remember him. They're like total opposite sides. Yeah. I was flying him somewhere long distance, and he came up into the kitchen area, because that's where we hung out. You know, that's where we like hid from passengers. And he's like, "Hey man, you from Louisiana?" I'm like, "What? Do I sound like a redneck? Do I sound that bad?" And he ended up just chatting it up, and he was pretty interesting too. I would say Newt Gingrich. That's the one that sticks in my mind the most. The guy was brilliant.
Well, you heard it when we started. We like to talk about a big idea and really get into it and learn about your mistakes, the successes you've had, and our hope is that we can inspire our audience to act on their big ideas. So, Randall, out of all the things that you've started, what is one big idea we can get into on the show today?
The biggest one is the one I'm actually doing now, and it's the one that I was like – that my whole life led up to doing that, and that's like being a good – doing this right here. This is, we just met. Mm-hmm. And like, how do you meet two people, do a show, and look like you've met, know everything about each other and able to communicate with them and connect with them? And that's doing a show, like doing a show. Like, we live in the most craziest time, like the best time to ever live in history is now. And we have the most powerful, I won't pull it out because it might ring, the most powerful device in history is our phone. And, first of all, I'm just blessed to be able to live in that this time.
So Think Like a Marketer show is your idea?
No, it's more than that. I mean, that's just a show. And, you know, the podcast is just the show. It's actually what you do with it. Because once you have the show and it's over, it's like, okay, now what? It's like everything that happens afterwards is what everybody else is not doing. It's like people come on your show, I'm certain, because I have it happen to me. They come on the show, and you never see anything about them being on the show. They don't say anything beforehand. They don't say anything after. It's like, why not? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Ralph Lifshitz. Do you know that name?
Is
that, okay, well, everybody knows him by Ralph Lauren, but his real name is Ralph Lifshitz.
I do.
Yeah. Right? It's like no one knew that name. But, one of the things that on Bloomberg TV, they did a whole expose on him. It was very interesting. He was like the 800-pound gorilla in the advertising world, because every dime that he made, he would dump it into, I mean, that's how he broke through the noise, and because he started out making ties. Mm-hmm. And, after I watched that, I was like, man, that's my style. Like, anytime he did something, he was going to do it big. Like, he paid to be on all those magazines. Like, most of, like, Architecture Digest, I'm going to be on there. Because he had to create this perception of this brand, his brand, because he had to be the brand. Mm-hmm. So he had to create, and he had these houses in the islands. Well, how are people going to see those? He was going to pay Architectural Digest to put his house on their cover so everybody sees, like, he's living that brand. Because if they didn't, how would they know?
Well, I agree with you. What you were saying earlier sounds a lot like Gary Vee. Are you a Gary Vee guy?
I do like Gary Vee. He's a do-it guy.
So Gary's about hustle, right? But Gary talks about what you were just saying, the idea that we do live in the best time, and that's actually the reason I started my company. One of the things that got me going early was that this device, everyone's got one. Everyone's got one in their faces in it. They're walking into telephone poles, falling into manholes. So how do I get myself and what I'm passionate about onto that screen where everybody's already looking? And since then, it's evolved into the podcast, getting to spend time each week with Laura, the audience, and getting to meet people like you, Randall. This is an exciting time, and you need to act on it.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, so he says about hustle and you got to work hard, like that's definitely part of it. But if working hard was a was the reason why you were going to be successful, I think everybody would be successful. It's not that you work hard.
Yeah.
Because when I speak, I say, hey, how many people in here work hard? And almost everyone always raises their hand.
I think it's a strategy for him. I think he's trying to pull the talent out of the kids that are sitting at home playing video games, wasting time. Kids that have talent, but they're letting it rot.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I think that's a great point. I think that everyone has something in them that someone would be willing to buy. Like, I think everyone. You go back 20 years ago, and if Gary Vee was talking then, and he said, hey, man, don't be surprised if the video gamers are making hundreds of millions of dollars.
What inspired you to start turning the mic on, turning the camera on, start putting yourself out there? Go back to when you started doing that.
It goes back to a parent. You know, when you look at your parents and they say, like, my dad smokes, right? Mm-hmm. And he says, you shouldn't smoke. Like, and, but he's smoking as he's telling me that. I was like, that's, you know, hypocritical, right? So if, and, you know, being in the marketing space, I mean, everyone on the planet is in the marketing business. My 9-year-old daughter's in the marketing business because when we leave out of here, she's going to try to convince me to stop at that McDonald's that's down the street. And I'm going to do everything I can to not go.
She's a YouTuber, too.
Yeah, she's got a YouTube channel. Yeah, Sarah Lee. Like and subscribe. But being in the marketing business, you strategize about what time do we live in, because that's like Gary talks about that. Like, yeah, maybe that worked before, but it doesn't work as much. Now there's this new stuff. We can do these shows. We can now broadcast. But how are you going to tell someone to do something that you're not doing? Or how are you going to know all of what's going on and how, you know, just the setting up, all the nuances, you have to actually do it. So that was kind of like, well, if I was telling somebody, if you want to break through the noise, you're going to have to do this. And they go, are you doing it? I'm like, no. I'm like, okay, then why am I going to listen to you? And that's kind of where I started. And somebody called me on it and said, well, are you doing it? I'm like, yeah, I'm not. But I should be. You're right, because I like it. I liked it, and I do like it.
Well, my story is a little different. When I approached Laura to do this, I said, hey, look, we're really good at talking back and forth. We're both entrepreneurs. We should start a business podcast. At the time, I had a long commute, like a lot of people here do in Houston, so I was listening to podcasts during my windshield time. When I moved my office 7 minutes from my house, now I had the time back in my life and decided I should go from listening to creating podcasts. And some of the same reasons, you know, to be a thought leader, to get your name out there, to get your brand out there. What's most exciting is some of the unintended and unexpected benefits. I'm doing a lot more learning than I ever have in my career. I'm growing my network with other business leaders, and I get to hang out with Laura every week. So where are you going to take it from here?
I'm not going to be a fan. Yeah. I think I have the same exact talent as Tony Robbins. I don't think they're any more talented than me. They've just been doing it longer than me.
Do you have a roadmap, a 5-year, 10-year plan?
You know, so I don't try to go too far out because the world changes and there's new things that change. I mean, if I would have made a 5-year map, I wouldn't have known that Alexa flash briefings were going to be around. So you can kind of pivot. But standard's the same, just be entertaining. And figure out how do you talk to the most amount of people and what technology gives me that ability or to connect with people. Actually, it's like, how do you connect with somebody? And even somebody who's way different than you or assumes you're different than them.
You talk about getting above the noise. The podcast, vlog space is very noisy and it's getting noisier. What are some ideas and strategies to separate your show out of all the noise?
Just understand the way human beings work is human beings, they like honesty. They may not like the words that come out of your mouth that hurt their feelings or it goes against what they believe to be true, but they all will always respect the honesty part. Nobody likes lying. Like somebody, like they're not, you know, eventually, because the work is so hard to do like this stuff and stay on like the Gary V's or the Patrick Bet Davids of the world, you can only sustain that if you're being true to who you are. And if you can stay and be true to yours, that people will gravitate towards you and you'll build an audience that you can communicate with in a spiritual, energetic level, not just a professional level.
How do we keep it honest in a world where we have such divided media?
There's a book that Ryan Holiday wrote. It's called Trust Me, I'm Lying. I think everyone should read that book. And it's Confessions of a Media Manipulator. If they read that book, they will understand when someone says fake news, that it is actually fake news. Because telling somebody half the truth is a whole lie. Mm-hmm. When you take something that's going to be for your bias or whatever, and you don't tell the full story, like you just give them the one sentence blurb, of course, I mean, you watch CNN, it's going to be liberals. You watch Fox, it's going to be conservative. If that's where you go to get your news, understand that it's going to be swayed in the way that you want to hear it. I think people should listen to both. But I do want to back up because you did ask me, like, if somebody's listening to this or your show, how do you grow the show? It's actually not that hard. Like, first off, be entertaining. If you can't be entertaining yourself, then get somebody who is entertaining and just ask them a question and let them go. And those people usually have an audience or they're building an audience. So that answers the creative part. But then when it's done, cut it up and put it everywhere. Like, you could literally take this show when it's done, now please do, and put it on LinkedIn. LinkedIn gives you a 10-minute. You can put up to 10 minutes. Find a little 10-minute segment where I'm the only one talking. I'm totally kidding. where you felt like there was something of value, whatever, somebody, if it was me or someone else that was on the show, upload it to LinkedIn. Take the 1 minute, put it on Instagram. Take, quotes that maybe were pulled out, if they said some quote or some book, and use those as a post. You could take this show and turn it into like 40 bits of content.
Straight out of Gary V's Crush It, Chapter 10. I literally would go back and listen to that 12-minute chapter on Audible once a month. So I do that with our show. And it's slowly but steadily growing, but it's a grind. And it helps if you have entertaining guests. Since we've gone to the guest format, it's allowed us to get some attention from Randall Chestnut fans, and you get exposure with our fans. So it's a good trade-off.
Yeah.
It lets us bring in more interesting folks than just Brian and I. So.
Yeah. I watch your stuff. You guys are good. Listen. So there's that aspect of it, like taking the actual content. Mm-hmm. But the most important thing is looking at this is like you should be making money doing the show. Like most people look at the show is going to bring them people who support whatever it is they do, whatever their business that they actually do. If it was a chiropractor and he had a show, well, he just wants to do it because he looks like a thought leader mm-hmm. in the chiropractic community, and then people come to his facility more. The show itself can make way more money than a chiropractic sir. I mean, you got, John Lee Dumas makes $150,000-$200,000 a month.
JLD, Entrepreneurs on Fire podcast.
Yeah. I mean, that is, if there was anything that somebody would take from me being here and they're thinking about, and they want a breakthrough, podcast, a show, either a live show or recorded show, and then doing kind of what we just said, the Gary V Chapter 10, is first figure out who your audience is, and then who else wants that audience, and then go to those people and ask them if they could support you either through money or products or stuff. You definitely would prefer to take money because clothes don't pay the bills.
I teach a podcast class at the University of Houston. I teach it once a quarter, and I recommend to the students to start with the app Anchor, where you download the app and you go. You pick a topic from the app that maybe you're interested in. You can choose a guest host or a host from anywhere in the world that the app will set up for you. And you can see if you can come up with the content on the fly. See if you can carry a conversation. See if you have the chops. See if you have the creative and the talent to do your own show in a risk-free environment. That's anchor.fm, and it's online. And then you just need to execute like we were talking about earlier.
Brian Fanzo, he talks about just push the damn button. That's not mine. It's his. I think he even trademarks it. He's like, just push the button and do it. Like, just do it. One of the questions you ask, come on the show, I think you asked me, like, what was a book, one of my favorite books?
Yeah.
And it was Relentless, like, hands down, my favorite book. And I don't know if you know Tim Grover, but he trained, like, Michael Jordan, Dwayne Wade. And he trained other people that weren't athletes. But one of the things is like, you just have to do it. Like, there's a time for talking about it, and then there's a time for doing it. And the people who make things happen in the world is you have to bring it from your mind and put it in the real world and actually do it. He opens up the book and he talks about Kobe Bryant and how he was in, I think it was one of the championship or got game five or something. And he went in for a shot and he tore his Achilles. Yeah, no, I can't imagine how painful that is. Just touching that thing, you couldn't imagine how, actually tearing it. And most people would have gotten, the training staff would have came over, put him on a thing, carried him out, he'd have waved to a thunderous applause, and the game would have gone on without him. Now Kobe Bryant, he got up and he shot his two free throws first because he wasn't finished.
Oh my
that
God.
Is relentless.
Yeah.
And if you want to do anything big ideas in anything or big anything, you have to be relentless. And the cool thing about that book is everyone has that ability, no matter where they live in the world, to be relentless.
And getting back to the time that we live in, you can go out and get the book right now. Everyone has access to it on Audible, on Kindle. No excuses to get started getting started.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we make a lot, I say we because I've been a part of that. We make excuses. A lot of the times, that's why I don't like, this movement on television, the Me Too. It's like, stop making excuses for why you're rude. Stop making excuses for why you don't have money and somebody else has money. Like, They were born rich. I mean, so they were born rich. Did you think they chose that? Just like you were born poor. You think you chose that? So stop complaining. It's actually what's the book? David and Goliath with Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah.
Talks about that very thing. He's like, you're more likely to be successful if you were broke than if somebody who got money. And you see it with people who win the lottery. Like, if that was if you want money, then you see what happens. No lottery, almost none of them, except if they already had money, make it. They go from success back down to survival.
I think the Mega Millions today is $368 million. I myself never bought a lottery ticket. Don't believe in it. Of course, you can. You used to gamble. You told us earlier you play a lot of poker in Vegas, right?
You know, it's just, but you know, playing poker is a calculated gamble. You know, you're not playing against the house. You're playing against other smart minds and women. When you play poker, be afraid of women. I say this not.
It's not just when you play poker.
Well, this is true. I'll say this: that women were endowed with a superpower, and they don't even use it as much as they should, and that's intuition. I mean, they literally can read your mind almost. And they don't yet. First off, they abuse it because they don't use it. I mean, I get mad because they have that ability and they don't even use it because they know. Sometimes they know whatever the situation, and they know, and they either let somebody go or they don't ask enough questions or they know they shouldn't have done whatever that was because they already knew what the outcome was going because they took, because they're fortunate. They're, you know, they foresee the future usually. And if you get with a woman and you say, like, for every good man there's a good woman, they're not behind her, next to him. It's only because she plugs you into the universe and now you have those superpower too. But the moment you piss her off or do something, she's gonna unplug you and go find somebody else to plug you back in.
This is probably a discussion for another time. I would suggest that society and media suppresses women's ability and talents by creating insecurities.
I think that, you know, this women's empowerment, I mean, women have always been empowered. I mean, what are you talking about? That's ridiculous. Women have always, if you don't like society, answer this question. Who raises the children majority of the time?
Women.
If we don't like society, and the men are in power, who raised them? Women. So what? I mean, come on now. They've always had the power. They always, I mean, I'm an only son.
Mm-hmm.
My dad did all this. On the outside, if you went to the house, it looked like he was the one in charge. He was not the one in charge because I never went to him when I wanted something. I went to her, and if I could sell her on it, it was a done deal.
My wife about 5 years ago called me a feminist, and at the time I didn't agree with her because I thought it meant you had to be outside picketing for women's rights, and of course I wasn't doing that, but over time I recognized that I'm okay with her having a career. The traditionalists don't agree with that, so in some ways, yeah, I guess I am a feminist.
When I used to work offshore for oil and gas, I worked for Schlumberger, and one time I was offshore, and one of the roustabout guys asked me, you know, what does your boyfriend think of you working? And I was like, oh, you mean working offshore? And he's like, no, I mean just working. And he's like, you know,
yeah, that's
my girlfriend doesn't have a job. She just stays home and I give her money if she needs it.
Right.
And I think, you know, and that's how it's been historically for a really long time. And I think, you know, the problem with that for women is, guess what? If you're my boyfriend or you're my husband or you're my dad and I want something,
right,
I have to come to you and ask for it. I can't be independent and get it for myself. So I think that's where the women's movement came in, was especially during the war,
yep.
World War II, women started having jobs and they started going into the workforce and they started to realize, hey, when I have a job, I can be independent. I can make my own decisions.
Right.
I can do what I want. I can buy what I want.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that. It just, somebody has to raise the kids.
Right. Well, I mean, Brian, comment on that.
I don't mean someone has to, because I was in a family. Both my mom and my dad both worked, so we kind of raised ourselves for up until middle school. She went and got a degree, but she raised us up until then. Someone still, if you don't like millennials, it's not a millennial problem. It's a parenting problem because someone raised them.
My wife and I are both business owners. We just make it work. Now that we got two, we're actually going to fly a young lady up from Mexico City on a visa for a year to live with us and be a live-in au pair. She'll help us make it work.
Yeah, you do. You have to.
Yeah, I had a dad that worked and a mom that stayed at home. My dad traveled a lot. He was traveling every month out of the country, and so a lot of times it was just my mom, my sister, right. and I, and he'd come home and be like, what's going on around here?
But, I just want to add this one caveat, because I'm divorced, so my daughter, they almost always leave the child with the female. Mm-hmm. So I don't know who decided that was the best person, but someone somewhere said that usually it's the female who gets it, and I'm not disparaging at that. But I think there's staying home and taking care of your kids. I don't think people put a lot of value in that. Like, if you ever read the butterfly effect, right? It's if a butterfly flapped its wing in Africa, the molecules of air would eventually turn into a hurricane. And for a long time, like, that was a myth until actual physicists tested it and they found out that was true. Not only was it true with physical things, but it was true with, like, us, like human beings. Like, something that we say to somebody could give them enough strength to go do something, and it caused the next thing and the next thing throughout history. I don't think that we put enough value in whoever raised those kids. Somebody has to raise them. I mean, they don't raise themselves. They're like empty. They're like, when you buy your iPhone, it comes preloaded, and then you decide what apps you're going to use and put it on there. Somebody chooses what apps to put in my daughter or your children's mind. Somebody, it's going to either be the parents or them or their some sphere of influence. So when you talk about the women's empowerment, I'm like, they had the best job in the world. I mean, spending time with, because my daughter at some point, she'll be 10 at the end of this month. I got another, 8 years, and she's going to go on her own, and that's it, 18 years I had. And then she's going to, I'd enjoy holding her hand and all of those things that she's not going to want to ever do again. The more that I could do that, you can't get that stuff back. The dad who has to go to work and do all that and misses and has to travel, if both parents are doing it, then both parents missing out on that. And I just don't think that that's going to be good for society in the long term. It doesn't have to be the female or the male, but somebody has to decide who's going to be the nurturer. And men, I'm sorry, I don't like to make the brain. Men are not as good nurturers as females, because that's why the courts chose to give the child to the female. And of course, we're talking in generalities. That doesn't mean that everybody's. And you're like, what does this have to do with small business, Randall? It has everything to do with it, because those people grow up to be business owners, and they hire people, and they are either chauvinist or they're the things that you shouldn't do as a boss, like flirt with your employees, whether it's a male or a female. It has everything to do with everything. That is the most important thing that anybody could do, is raise a child. So for women to think that like being going to work is somehow more higher up, I think they're misinformed themselves.
I think just people have different views on like what's right and just how they want to live.
You ask them at the end when they die. Yeah. Ask them the question: was it more important for you to be at work? Mm-hmm. Or what do you think they're going to say? What are you going to say? And what are you going to say? Are you going to say it was work?
Probably not.
There you go. Then and there you move my point right there. You're not. But everybody's fighting to go to work. When that's not what they wanted. I mean, at the end of the day, what's the byproduct?
You don't need to leave the house to work these days. You don't have to work the Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. You can work while the kids are at school, while the kids are in bed. You can be working at home. It can be a man, woman, doesn't matter. Or you can do it together. And you may not have to miss a kid's event, and you can be present. And that's one of the biggest reasons I started my own company, so I had the freedom to be present for my kids.
Yeah, that's cool.
And not just for kids' sake, but also just, I think I work from home as well and run a business. And, that means sometimes when something important is going on with my family or friend or something where I want to be there with them, then I can make that decision for myself. Like, I don't have to ask someone. If I need to take care of my own life during the day, I mean, today, sadly, I went up to Shreveport Sunday night for a conference and got my hotel was full of bed bugs.
Oh.
It was awful. But today I said, I'm miserable. I'm going to the doctor. I didn't have to ask anybody. I just went.
I recently decided, and it was hard, to just make everybody, I was going to work everybody virtually, use Slack, and we use a phone system so we know everything that's going on, and let people work from home. And that bridges the gap to allow anybody to take. Yeah. Now you can actually take care of the kids and do both at home. So
yeah. I have a team, and they work from home, or they work from wherever they are.
Yeah.
And we check in with video calls. And
yeah.
Well, since you're already talking about software, it's probably a good time to get into Tech for Granted, where we ask you, Randall, about software apps that you use personally or in business that makes your life better. Do you have any to recommend to our audience?
Yeah, well, I definitely love Audible because I love to read. I mean, I was reading before it, but I think that's learning is like if you don't learn, like read, I mean, you're no different than the person who can't read. Mm-hmm. Same thing. You're not reading. He's not reading. So why'd you? So Audible definitely as far as that. Slack for a business. If you don't know what that is, it's just really a software that's you can manage employees and projects. It does a whole bunch of other stuff, but mainly. Using that to manage a project or individuals through that. So I like that one. All the social apps, I use those. I probably use LinkedIn the most, though.
Any emerging social apps? You mentioned Alexa briefings earlier.
Yeah, voice search. When you think of voice search, so I have a friend, he's rolling out, it's a voice search in a real estate specific. It's called Ask DOS. Mm. And he's having a tough time getting real estate agents to understand where is that going to be in a few more years, because they're like, well, why do I need to do that? I could just type it in, and you got the drop down boxes. He's like, well, because eventually you'll be operating in a virtual world. There is no keyboard in the virtual world. When you go in a virtual space and you put on the goggles and say, show me the house that has no pool, three bedrooms, and it pops up in the virtual space and you get to tour it virtually. So he's a little bit ahead of the time. So, voice search like Alexa, hands down, Alexa blows air. I mean, Google and Katana, was it Katana? Is that what? I haven't had a Microsoft product.
Katana,
I hear it's good though. I hear it's good, but Alexa just dominates. And now they rolled out their microwave this week. It's
Alexa, microwave my dinner.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's part of the Microsoft Connect that they're going to build, where your whole home is going to be connected using voice.
So we're going to have synthesizers speaking of bots. I mean, basically, Alexa's a bot.
Yeah.
There's now Facebook Messenger chat bots. Mm-hmm. And I went to the ManyChat conference. ManyChat's the company enables Mikhail. Facebook Messenger chatbots.
Yeah.
The conversation flows that go with it, and you can actually, for your business, set up a bot that answers questions specific to your business through Facebook.
I tell you, if somebody's out there and they're looking for something to do, master that. I'm actually having on my show tomorrow. She's a top. She doesn't use just in ManyChat, but that's the one she knows the best.
Yeah.
She does bot programming, but it's amazing. The things you could do, there's niche it down and just do that.
I went to the conference. I didn't even know that everybody's got a QR code basically inside their Facebook Messenger. So if I want to connect with Randall, I can just scan his code and boom, we're connected.
Yeah.
And you can start bots that way just with a code.
Same with LinkedIn.
LinkedIn has that.
Does it?
But it doesn't give you the ability to do what she's saying, but you could do that. I wish LinkedIn did. That chat is, I don't think people realize how powerful it is.
It is comic.
Because once you can get someone to message your page, you have an 80%, 90% open rate.
Yeah, compared to like 20%.
Yeah, I met Miguel, the Russian kid, back when he first started, like 6 years ago, mm-hmm. 5 years ago.
Russian kid. Yeah, I got my picture taken with him.
Yeah, he's pretty cool. He's sharp.
I asked him how old he was. He's 28, the founder of ManyChat.
So how do people find you, Randall?
They can go, the easiest way is, is they can find me on Facebook. They can go to Randall Chestnut, and that's Chesnutt. No T in the middle, two at the end. I always say little in the middle, but I got much back.
That's awesome.
And then they could, you could email me at randall@spokenabout.com. That our Instagram is R Chestnut. Anytime I put that last name, even though I say that, people put the T in the middle and forget the extra one at the end. Mm. So you type in Randall on Facebook and I usually pop up. So just put in Randall, not Randall's.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But you can tell a friend about Randall.
That's good.
All right. Well, go out there and find Randall. Thank you all for listening. And now
yeah.
go out there and
see y'all later next time.
See you, everybody.
Central Texas Rain's the strongest drink I've found.
Thank you for listening to Big Ideas Small Business. Follow us at BISB Media and visit our website at www.bisbmedia.com.